Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Pray in the Dark. If you're watching on video, you got that reference. If you're listening on your podcast feed, it's constructive criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mason Clark.
What's up, amigos? How you doing?
And Pray in the Dark.
Who knows what will attack me from behind?
Hogak.
Ooh, no, he's banned.
Too soon.
Too soon is right. This week we will be talking about Modern post-Hogak. We're really excited to talk about it. But before we do, let's talk about the thing that this podcast is about. It's about getting better. We want to talk about hashtag always improving. This week, I'm going to go first, if that's okay, guys.
Fire away.
So, last week I kind of made this proclamation that I was quitting Paper Magic. I went and sold all my Paper Magic cards. I went and bought a Modern deck on MTGO. I upped my Mana Trader subscription. And
what
I played.
Modern?
I bought Titan Shift.
Okay, keep going. Sorry, I was just curious.
Yeah, it's also like it was like $110 when I bought it. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's very cheap.
Yeah, it's only gone up $80 since it won the MCQ. So like, not actually that big of an increase. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I bought Modern Shift, played it in the challenge, watched Matt play the challenge, played a little bit of the challenge with Matt in Legacy the next day, and kind of fully bought into my end of, you know, Paper Magic life, like being a dad, playing challenges, things like that. It was fun. I think I picked a great deck for the weekend. I played Titan Shift. It's the deck that I was going to play anyway. And, you know, I kind of talked about it on the podcast why I thought it was good. I hit some really rough matchups, but it was really cool to both know that I knew when the deck that I know is good. Like, it's kind of reassuring. You're like, I know this deck is good. I know when it should be good, and I can pick it in the right spots. Other times, you know, I played Blue White, I played Jund, I played, you know, Charge Tron at this last GP. So I think I've really done a good job of expanding my range while also still being able to go back to the things that I enjoy and I love when they're correct. And I think that this weekend was a good example of this. You know, we saw the Titan Shift decks do well at the SCG, in the Classic, in the Open, in the MTGO PTQ. So I felt really good about my ability to play more of this Modern format and also just identify where the Modern format is at right away.
That's awesome. How did you enjoy playing them? I know you said like you like got into the routine, but how did like did you enjoy like the act of competing on Modo and stuff like that?
So I played pretty poorly this weekend, but a lot of it had to do with like being back into Modo. I think Modo is a different skill set than other parts of Magic, and people don't really like to admit that. But I mean, if we think about like the mechanics that you use playing Modo, as somebody who's very tactile like me at times, it can be really hard to get in and out of that mindset. There was a time where I conceded on board when I had a Summoner's Pact in my hand. I hit the concede button, and then I was like, oh, Matt, we're so stupid. He's like, why? I was like, because I played Reclamation Sage in my main deck for this reason. Which is
the old
really,
Ross Merriam.
Yeah, which is really funny, because Ross Merriam went and cast it and didn't have it in his deck. So, you know, the reverse Ross Merriam, as I like to call it.
With your powers combined, you can easily win a game of Magic.
With Reclamation Sage. If he's casting them and I'm putting them in the main deck, you know, we have a powerful combination there. But no, I think that overall, I'm enjoying being back into a place where I'm comfortable in Magic. I think that for me, it's been a real struggle being a dad and being a competitive Magic player. And I kind of posted about this on my private Twitter, just kind of talking about like my role on constructive criticism, my role in Magic, and what I can be reasonable about. Because I've tried to lie to myself a lot of times on this podcast and everything, and I just don't have time to go play some local event. You know, I have time to play 1Ks when they come up. I have time to play PTQs when they come up. And then the rest of my time needs to basically be online to kind of maximize the number of games of Magic that I can play. And it was really fun to kind of, I don't know, there was some kind of pressure relieved by knowing, like, this is my fate now. Like, this is what I'm here to do. And it was fun. Like, I didn't do well in the challenge. I played a league right after that and did decent in the league with the same deck. And, you know, I mean, that's more modern than I've played in a long time. And I just wouldn't do that if I wasn't as invested as I am now in online Magic.
That's awesome. That's great.
Trey, what about you? What did you do to improve a Magic or life this week?
Well, I got Dredgevine out of my system.
Did you play Dredgevine?
Which is important. And it's a thing that's been happening a lot online. It's been a lot of people posting Dredgevine lists. This has been a thing that's been seeing happening because, you know, everybody still wants to find whether or not that deck is still viable post-Hogak. I understand the draw, right? But, like, all of the pieces of those kinds of lists were around before Hogak was around, and Dredgevine wasn't a real player in Modern. It was a fringe player. And the primary reason is that it suffers from four Vengevines. Like, if you hit the part of your deck when you have the Vengevines, the deck's great. And when you don't hit the Vengevines, it's not great. So one of the things that was great about Hogak was not just because it was an 8-8 trample for free or whatever, all of those kinds of things. It was basically, like, additional kinds of things that are of a power level that make the deck worth playing that you could hit that wasn't just Vengevine. And everybody's kind of searching for what that other thing is going to be, but they're all looking at pieces that were already there before that weren't in the deck list that were there for Dredgevine before. Like, people weren't playing Scab Ruinator, people weren't playing, you know, these other pieces. And it definitely feels like that. It feels like it's missing a necessary piece to be a deck that can truly compete in the modern environment.
Maybe like a 3-mana enchantment that works in the graveyard. Would that help the deck?
Yeah, Mason, it would. If it was Bridgevine literally saw printer play, yeah. Yeah. I have a question, though, for you, Trey, on this. With the Scab Ruinator list, are they playing Altar?
No.
That might help it, right? Where, like, you're using your Scab Ruinator to fill your Scab Ruinator. I don't know. Maybe it's too dorky, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know that there's enough draw to pull you in that direction when you don't have additional payoffs past Vengevine. Like, yeah. You're really working hard to build your deck around recurring Vengevines, but you don't have anything else that also rewards you for doing that, right? Like, that was the thing that you really got from Hogak in that regard, was that, like, it played into the plan of recurring Vengevines, right? And it was another payoff that you could hit. So you had eight instances of something that you could hit that would win the game as opposed to just four.
Let's say you don't know what Scab Ruinator does. I mean, I obviously do.
That's why, like, you were checking your phone during the podcast that people can see on video.
I was so bored because I knew the answer, and I totally wasn't trying to look the card up.
Sure. Scab Ruinator is a blue-blue colorless 5/6 fling that you can cast from your graveyard if you also exile three creatures from your graveyard at the time of casting. But that doesn't change the mana. You still got to pay 3 mana for it. So
gotcha.
You need 3 mana and 3 creatures, and you get a 5/6 flying.
And it's blue-blue.
And it's blue-blue. So yeah, it is a big ask for you to cast.
I don't know why they just don't give a Survival of the Fittest in Modern. Clearly, that's the answer. Yeah.
Survival, yeah. Discard my Scab Ruinator. Search Scab Ruinator. Buy it back. Alter me.
No, bring back Haunted Dead. Discard your Scab Ruinator. Then cast your Scab Ruinator. And then you've spent 5 mana and didn't recur your Vengevines. It's really, really a treat.
Wow.
So, so what we're saying, Trey, is people should put down their crabs and their vines and give up.
Nothing hurts me more than saying put down your Vengevines. It is a deep personal blow to me, but you should put down your Vengevines.
I can relate to you on a real level on that one, Trey. Vengevine is one of my favorite cards ever. Mason, what about you? What did you do to improve at life or Magic this week?
I just made sure to have a lot of fun playing new Modern and try anything that my heart desired. So decks I've played since the last podcast include, but not all of them, so I've played Soul Herder Bant. I've played a bunch of different Bant Blade decks. I played Kethis combo. I played Eldrazi Tron. I played Tron. I played Bant Tron. I played Green White Tron, or Green White Eldrazi, I guess, is what that deck's called, like the Warfield Rhino Overturf deck. And then I played Dredge.
You also played Bant Eldrazi.
I think I said that one. Yeah, Bant Eldrazi, Dredge. I watched that league, and I watched an Amulet. I co-piloted like an Amulet Titan league. So I've done a lot of fun stuff in Magic. I've also built a lot of different decks. I have a deck I kind of want to talk about that I think is pretty good too on today. But I've just really been exploring and having fun with the new Modern format. There's, like, you know, a lot of different things you can be doing in Modern right now. A lot got reset in the last week from talking about stuff, and I just really wanted to explore it.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we took last week to talk about Legacy. And this week we're going to finally get back into Modern. And it's funny because, like, our last week's episode was super popular. People, you know, really downloaded that episode. We got more views in different areas. But I think that it's funny to see that people might not have been ready for Modern content. I think they all had the things that they wanted to do. And now that they've tried the things that they wanted to do, I think it's a good time to talk about the things that they could be doing. So,
yeah. Oh, Urza. I played Urza 2 with Mentor. That was dope.
Well, speaking of new and awesome things, I want to give a shout out to our newest patron, Peladon. Peladion? I'm never going to say this right, but thank you so much. He's one of our newest Constructed Critics. And yeah, it means a lot when we get those $10 patrons, those $5 patrons. And, you know, it just means that we're doing things right, and it just means a lot. So we want to give you a special shout out. We have no Patreon questions today. The thread just went up, so I'm not really surprised by that. But if you are a patron and you want to ask a question, there's a thread on the Patreon. There's a thread in the Constructed Critics group if you're a patron of $5 or more. And, you know, we can take your questions. So quick announcement. There are some technical issues. We talked about Constructed Clash coming back. Super excited about that. But there are some technical issues that won't be resolved for a little while. So we figure out another way to produce video content with maybe some kind of Patreon-only reward afterwards. But there will be gameplay content going up on the YouTube channel. So if you're watching there, that's awesome. And then we'll find a way to include additional Patreon-only content from me in that same vein with whatever we choose. But right now, Constructed Clash probably won't come back as a weekly thing. It might come back as a special thing that we do every once in a while, with it promising to come back as a weekly thing soon. Anyway, with that being said, you know what is always here, Mason?
Depression.
What? No. Our sponsor at Oasis Games.
Which is that makes sense too.
Way less depressing that than that. Wow. Cheer us up with an ad read, Trey.
Hello, fellow Magic competitor. Do you feel that? The constant depression? The familiar, persistent rumbling, your stomach demanding satisfaction? Tournament Magic requires that you put aside your earthly demands in pursuit of total domination. Battle Across the Plains provides no time to slake your immense hunger. You must pursue glory across the plains unsatisfied or burden yourself with a giant bag of trail mix. If you're like me, and I think you are, the last thing you need in the heat of battle is to be reminded of your insatiable hunger. But now the game itself seeks not only to deny you time to feed, but to taunt you with these food tokens. I have seen the community today erupt in joy at these insidious insults to your hunger. I do not understand the unbridled rejoicing at these taunting, delicious, decadent tokens floating, inedible, through the plains as the round clock continues to count down, preventing you from ever seeking even the refuse of a snack. Oh, cruel food token, how you mock us all. If you are somehow not persuaded to rebel against this affront that is the food token, then there is no one better prepared to help you order up your never-ending buffet of crown-stealing food tokens than the people at Oasis Games. Head on over to mtgoasis.com and use code CCMTG for 15% off your first order, or you can use code Would That Be Good for 4% off every order.
So are you guys telling each other about the ad read before I get it?
No. I can adapt to things in the moment. It doesn't, I don't know if you know that, but I am a person with thoughts and feelings, and if I feel that the opportunity presents itself for a joke based on something that's immediately happened, it just seamlessly, as a seasoned professional, seamlessly slide it in as if it were pre-planned and prepared.
Okay. All right. All right.
A little inside baseball for you.
Oasis Games really is amazing. It's pretty cool to have a... We okay there, fam? It's pretty amazing to have a sponsor that I legitimately support. Like, I mean we've had lots of sponsors on this podcast, and it's always going to be somebody that I believe in. You know, we actually have other sponsorship offers right now that we could be using on this podcast, but I like don't believe in them, and I really believe in Oasis Games. I believe that they are the best place to buy Magic singles, and so, you know, as of the ad read, just here's my endorsement for them. You should check them out at mtgoasis.com. So should we talk Modern, guys?
Never heard of it.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to start with a deck that I know you've heard of because you bought it from Oasis Games, and that's Titan Shift, Mason.
Love it. Big fan of Titan Shift.
So we kind of talked about this during the Always Improving. But, guys, this deck is kind of back in an interesting way. I want to talk about the list that went undefeated in the MCQ. I'm just going to read that one off. We have four Secure Traveler.
One second. What's the training? What are we doing for today's training grounds? For
people man. Who don't know? Oh, man. It's so exciting. I can't believe I forgot it, Mason. You're the best. Today, we're each going to talk about two decks that we're excited about in Modern. Mason, how did you decide that we talk about the decks?
Yeah, so originally the idea was we wanted to talk about some decks in Modern, and then so I thought maybe we proposed the idea of picking one deck that we're like pretty sure is a real deck, and one deck that we're excited by and we want to try stuff and see if it could maybe become a real deck, like kind of like a blossoming deck, right? It might not bloom, but we're kind of hopeful and we think it could. So that's kind of where we're at today.
So my deck, the Titan Shift deck, is actually the deck that I hope that blossoms because there's some interesting things going on in Titan Shift that have never happened before that I want to talk about. And, you know, they're having innovation in a deck that has been kind of tier 1.5 for a really long time is actually really good for the Modern format, I feel like. And so Titan Shift, as I read the deck list, we'll kind of talk about some like really major changes that I think these lists kind of shared as far as the things that they were doing that other Titan lists weren't doing. And I don't know if these guys know each other. I don't know if the MCQ list was based off of the other list. I think that they were only a couple of cards off from each other in the sideboard. So it could be just that, but I kind of just want to talk about those. So this list has four Secure Tribalder, one Obstinate Bela, four Primeval Titan. So no Wood Elves, no Courser of Prufix. The one of green creature that's placing that Summoner's Pack slot is Obstinate Baloth, which we'll get into later. One Chandra, Torch of Defiance. This is a card that saw a lot of play in the past that I've been a huge advocate of, that things haven't really changed on that for me, but you know, other people are adopting it again, and that's good to see. Three Summoner's Pack, four Lightning Bolt, four Explore. This is a card we'll talk about. Four Search for Tomorrow. One, I never say this card right. Somebody help me here. It's the Acid Moss.
Monvoli
Acid Moss. Four Scape Shift, one Call Your Inherent Expedition, one Prismatic Omens, 28 lands with three Cinderglade, one Field of the Dead.
One, baby.
But interesting enough, still four Volokut. So four Stomping Grounds, three Cinderglade. There are no Shelter Thicket in this list, and it still has the six fetch lands. Oh, there is a Shelter Thicket. There's seven fetch lands. Man. All kinds of things are crazy in this list. The sideboard here has three Veil of Summer, one Collective Oofy, two Dampening Sphere, one Fry, one Anger of the Gods, one Beast Within, one Reclamation Sage, one Tyler's Tracker, two Force of Vigor, and two more Obstinate Baloth. So here's the reason I want to talk about this deck. I believe this deck is good. I believe that people are still going to be unprepared for this deck, even though it just did really well this weekend. Here's the reason I think people are going to be not prepared, guys. People don't like respecting Titan decks. It doesn't matter if it's Amulet Titan. It doesn't matter if it's Titan Shift. People are like, nah, it's fine. They'll lose to like one of their rando matchups and everything will be fine. One of the things that the format did because of Stoneforge Mystic is it got more creature aggressive. And both of these lists play that main deck, Obstinate Baloth. They also play Lightning Bolt. And the only difference between kind of playing these lightning bolts and things like that is that they're not playing as many sweepers main, which means that they might have a worse human matchup. But it's easily fixed by like cutting a lightning bolt and something else for two sweepers. You know, you could even cut a land. It kind of just depends. But
you could cut Bale. I felt like Bale off was a response to burn. You're going to be popular.
Yeah, but I don't think that will change. Trey, you're nodding your head there. You think burn stays popular?
And I think that this was definitely a response to burn. And, you know, I didn't see a lot of reason as far as what happened this weekend for burn to, you know, fade out of popularity.
Yeah.
I mean, burn's always going to be somewhat cyclical. If you want to prepare for burn, you can.
Yeah. I mean, and that card can be something else. One of the other things is you can think that, like, Jund would be more popular too. So you could play Obstinate Baloth in this spot. You could play Thragtusk in this spot. I think just a green creature that's a win condition to help you against, that also is good in those matchups, is going to be better against like the blue-white style Stoneblade decks that are like more controlling. And I think
that...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, what if you played Golos?
I don't like that.
Okay.
So I think the life gain is pretty important against Burn. Like, you deal yourself a little bit of damage with Scapeshift because you're like kind of aggressive with your lands in the blind. And because of that, I really like Thrag Tusk or Obstinate Baleth in that spot. And if you play an Obstinate Baleth in the main, it actually frees up some sideboard slots for you. So I actually didn't hate this when I saw this from Ross Merriam, and then seeing it in the winning MCQ list made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I saw Ross, Drake Sasser of Team Nova, and someone else all do that. I'm curious if they work together, maybe. Maybe it was Becky. But yeah, I think that freeing up the sideboard slot is nice. Along the lines of playing Golos, would you consider Golos over Chandra as like your? It isn't as good as being card advantage, but it fits your main game plan a little more. Is that something that's interesting to you, or is that
I
just
actually
too cute?
don't think it fits your main game plan more. I think that if you, well, no, I don't
Think
think it
that?
does. I had to think about that for a second. So one of the things that is not as true about this list, because it plays a Colony Heart and Prismatic Omens, is typically you're the control deck in most matchups. And I think Chandra fits that game plan more. And now that you're playing four Explorers, it makes even more of a reason to play a four drop in that slot. And if you look at, like, you're actually playing more four drops than this, playing Obstinate Baleth and Chandra in that spot, which are both threats that I kind of said are reasonable against burn, reasonable against control, and they're fitting the game plan better while not being like this thing that you can't do before your opponent gets counter magic up or before your opponent can kill you. Whereas Golos, it might be actually just be too slow.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if it's good or not, but when you were talking about the deck list, that was something that popped in my head as just a way to, like, grab a Valakut, grab a Field of the Dead, or whatever. So.
Yeah, so let's talk about Field of the Dead. This is a new innovation that I know people were all hyped about. I have not tried it yet. However, it had come out as I was playing the challenge. People were talking about it. And so while I was playing the challenge, I got to think about, like, is this what I want my deck to be doing? And there were times where I was like, man, I wish I had a Field of the Dead.
Yeah, I think Field of the Dead is nice. I saw that kind of floating around before, and one of the things I like about it is there's like a lot of Karn the Great Creators going on, and it's like people kind of knew Shift was a good deck going into the weekend. At least that was my read on what people were talking about. So like they knew like to play Witchbane Orb in their sideboard, and Field of the Dead, you saw it in round, I think 11 of the SCG, where Ross beat Ally Warfield, where she had a Witchbane Orb in play, and he just cast Scapeshift and got Field of the Dead, and was like, okay, well, here's 15 zombies instead, your turn, So I like it. I think it's a nice one of, and it I don't th the opportunity cost is there because you are losing like an actual land, but I think it makes itself up. And he also does free up a sideboard slot because that
You're
is like another thing you can do.
well, it's playing 28 lands, right? So because you're playing
You took a spell
Explore,
slot, right?
right? Because you're playing Explore, you're using it as a spell slot with because you want 28 lands to Explore, it actually makes a lot of sense. That was the reason I wanted to talk about Explore, is I don't typically like Explore in Valakut. I think it's usually overplayed. It doesn't actually fit the game plan very well. But when you go to 28 lands and you have Field of Dead, it actually makes a lot of sense. Because I think it also explains why you have, I mean, if you look at the list, you have Snowcover Forest and regular forest, and you have the Shelter Thicket that I thought wasn't in the list, which I was actually going to mention because of Field of the Dead, but it does look like it's there. So you can get to seven different lands pretty easily while still grabbing mountains, because you have five different mountain types.
Yeah, and you have, like you said, both basics have double type now because it makes it snow, which is a weird rule, but is true. It's just weird. Yeah.
You have three mountains and three snow-covered mountains. It makes a lot of sense with Field of the Dead. It's great innovation for the deck. That's kind of it for me on this. Anything that you want to say on it, Trey?
No, I mean, I do think that it is good to have that. It's nice for this kind of a deck to have a backup plan and just something that they don't have to really do a lot of a stretching in order to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first time that I've been excited to play Explore. I'm still not in on the Calling of Heart and Prismatic Omens, though, fam. It's still. I think you're going too all in on a deck that can just play too good of a control game for me to be that all in on.
What would you want to replace it with?
I would play another Acid Moss, at least. You could just cut the Calling Heart for an Acid Moss, and you could convince me that Prismatic Omen is worth it. But my.
Interesting. I thought I would think Sweltering Suns is like it kind of fits the thing you wanted to consider adding anyways.
Yeah, I mean, my list that I played this weekend had one Anger of the Gods, one Sweltering Suns in the main deck, and I would consider finding room for those again. But I don't want to just cut a Summoner's Pact and cut something else to do that. I want to test kind of this thing that was clearly successful in two different tournaments first.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you always, and that's something we probably don't talk about enough on the show, but like when you see a list that performs and it's like very clear, and also in like a list performs and a list that's like, you know, 74 to 75 also does well, it's probably best to run that through a league, you know, or play that some before you start tinkering with stuff, because you can just throw, you know, if you don't know the 28 lands for explore thing, then you kind of explore, it doesn't quite work as well, blah blah blah, has cascading effects.
Yeah. The other thing that we'll just kind of mention before we move on from this is Veil of Summer is a broken Magic card that I had not thought about for Volokut, and I played it this weekend in the challenge, and that card is gas.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's going to be one of my deck lists we'll talk about later. That it's part of the reason why I think the deck got a big oomph. So,
well, let's talk.
What's your other deck?
Yeah, my next deck is Jund. So the list that I pulled up here is the list from, I believe, Max 7X. Went 8-1 in a premier event. We have 2 Scavenging Ooze, 4 Tarmogoyf, 2 Seasoned Pyromancer, 3 Bloodbraid Elf, 1 Huntmaster of the Fells, 3 Red and 6, 1 Liliana of the Veil, 2 Fatal Push, 4 Inquisition of Kozilek, 4 Lightning Bolt, 2 Thoughtseize, 2 Assassin's Trophy, 3 Kolaghan's Command, and 24 lands. The sideboard has Ghost Quarter, Surgical Extraction, a couple Collective Brutalities, Weather the Storm, which we'll get to, kind of talk about that, 3 Foamlander Mage, 2 Plague Engineers, and a Kalitas. So, couple things. This is not just like an auto list that I would play. I think Jund is one of those decks that, you know, while we just talked about like Volokut, how you're like, you should probably like try to play the decks that, you know, that are doing well. I actually don't think that's true of Jund. I think that Jund is a deck that you're going to get the most mileage by knowing your deck list and knowing how you want to play your deck list and having a game plan. And so for that reason, I wouldn't play this exact 75, but this is the 75 that I would base things off of, and here's the reasons why. This deck has 3 Kolaghan's Command, which I believe is at a premium right now. I think this card is decent against Burn, as it kills a creature, makes them discard a card, getting you a bunch of life. I think this card is great against Stoneforge Mystic. I think this card is great in the Jund Mirror. I think this is like one of the only ways that you can possibly beat the big mana decks with Fulminator Mage. Like, Kolaghan's Command actually just seems like the best place that's ever been in Modern. It's something I would be excited about. The other thing that I really liked about this deck is Seasoned Pyromancer for Matt and I in Modern testing so far is just one of the best cards we played in Modern, and this deck plays them. And if anybody knows me really well, they know I hate Dark Confidant and Jund. This list doesn't play any, and I believe that's correct. Especially now that people have Run in 6, why would you possibly want to play a Bob?
Yeah, can you imagine registering Bob in 2019 and your deck has the access to Run in 6?
I just don't get it. I saw so many Dark Confidant lists. I'm like, what are you doing? Trey,
yeah,
you have a lot of thoughts on all the things I just said.
I just want to talk about that Huntmaster of the Fells.
So one of the lists played 0 Bloodbraid Elves and 2 Huntmaster of the Fells that I saw.
Burn, 0 Bloodbraid Elves seems aggressive, but
if you think there's going to be a lot of burn, then you might as well just like always hit, you know, gain 2.
I like Huntmaster of the Fells a lot better when you're playing Liliana the Last Hope. I think that it gets a lot of mileage out of that card because it lets you block with your Huntmaster and buy it back. But I have been a fan of Huntmaster of the Fells in the past. And in the past, it had to do with decks that were playing to the board and burn being popular. And that's kind of where we're at right now. I think it's just kind of taking the spot of like the Kalitas that you might play as like your other 4-drop. And I think that's reasonable right now.
Yeah, especially because you're getting less benefit from the like graveyard hate that you get from Kalitas. I don't think that you're getting as much of a benefit there because there's not as many graveyard decks floating around. And so, you know, having Huntmaster as your value card against burn decks and Stoneforge decks makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does flip to kill a Stoneforge, which seems powerful. Actually, does it just do that on their turn? I don't remember what this card does.
Well, they cast a spell now, but...
Right, so if they just leave up mana to flip... To activate, so they have to activate during their turn or Huntmaster flip. No, that doesn't work.
No, activation will still flip.
Yeah, so they actually can't activate into a Huntmaster.
Well, they can. They just have to respond to the trigger, right?
No. Yeah.
Well, they just have to lose their.
You just lose
their Stoneforge.
Yeah, and you get your skull where your sword in play.
With no creature.
Well, I mean, but in theory, you have other things, too. Yeah.
But you have a 4-4 to block the Germ Token.
Well, the real problem is that we're doing this on turn 4 or 5. And I was going to say is that, like, you know, people do play cards later in the game. They're always curve out.
I'm just saying, like, it specifically is good against that play pattern. I'm not saying it's, like, turn 2, turn 3. I'm saying you can't activate Stoneforge Mystic as your turn with this in play.
Yeah, unless you're willing to sacrifice your Squire. That's the only way, right?
Right, but that's a pretty big downside with Batterskull, right? Because that Batterskull Stoneforge interaction is so powerful.
Yeah, it's quite powerful for sure.
Go ahead.
Sorry, continue. No, you continue.
Oh, I was just gonna say that one of the reasons that I really like the direction that this list is going is it's really playing to a couple of strengths of the deck. You know, Seasoned Pyromancer, Brendan Six, like it's playing the most powerful cards that Jund could play, and it gets to do that because of the way the format's shaping out. Whereas previously you would make really weird concessions with Jund, like playing more aggressive cards, you know, the one mana green snake, or these different things that people were trying out to like concede in different spots. And you know, this list plays six discard spells, you know, which is typically when Jund has been its best. It's been playing, you know, whether it's a 3-3 split or a 4-2 split in some way, six discard spells at one mana to, you know, disrupt decks. It's playing all four Tarmogoyf. It gets to play Scavenging Ooze, which is just, you know, one of those cards that if you untap with a bunch of times, you usually just typically win the game. I don't know. This Jund deck is doing everything that I would want to do in a Jund deck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think also by adding additional things like Culligan's Command and Seasoned Pyromancer and these types of things, then it's also making your blood raids better, right? Because you're having more high impact targets that you're going to get off your cascades, as opposed to just like, well, I hit a Thought Seize and let's like, maybe that's good. But a lot of times it's not going to be impactful enough to like want to pull you towards playing blood raids. But if you're playing a bunch of like impactful, powerful three drops and you're going to like cascade into Liliana or Seasoned Pyromancer or, you know, Culligan's Command, then there's a lot more reason to be playing a higher number of blood braids.
So, Mason, Assassin's Trophy versus Abrupt Decay, lots of people play a 1-1 split. Some people all play, this list plays all Assassin's Trophy, some lists play all, you know, Abrupt Decay. To me, I like Assassin's Trophy right now. I think that the uncounter roll doesn't matter as much, whereas, you know, being able to hit Tron lands can be really high up there. It's pretty reasonable against a bunch of other decks. What are your thoughts?
I imagine that while the uncountable thing is nice, I think probably the real tipping point is more likely the land that you give them. Like, for example, if your removal spell on the play against Burn is Assassin's Trophy, excuse me, for like an Eidolon, right? They get to like double spell on you a lot quicker. So I imagine that might be where it's coming from, where if you're going to kill, if like a lot of the time you want to kill things that, you know, aren't lands or cost three or less, then having Abrupt Decay is nice, because it lets you do that. And you also do have the uncounterable in the matchups, you know, the small percentage of the time when your opponents actually have counter spells in Modern. I guess it's up a little bit because of Force Negation, but still, not like it's all the time. And Assassin's Trophy is a catch-all. I would say that I agree for the most part. I would lean towards Assassin's Trophy more than Abrupt Decay. But I think if you, you know, we looked at this deck, we talked about how they made a lot of concessions to Burn, right? I'd much rather have Abrupt Decay if I expect a lot of Burn and Stoneforge Mystic decks than I would have Assassin's Trophy. Because if I Assassin's Trophy a, like, Stoneforge Mystic, I'm closer to them getting Batterskull. And it already feels kind of bad to kill the Stoneforge Mystic to stop Batterskull, but you're like, well, at least I know I have, like, three turns. Assassin's Trophy makes it two turns, gets you a little bit closer, and lets them start deploying their hand more. And, you know, you can, like, play a sword, equip a sword better, so...
Well, you don't have to do that, right? Because you can just Assassin's Trophy the Batterskull when they put it into play, and they can't return it to their hand.
That's true. Yeah, you can always.
And you save can't it do that with Abrupt Decay. So that's actually one of the reasons I like it more.
Well, you can kill
the germ.
You can kill the germ though. Yeah, I get. But then you like have to deal with the Batterskull. But it's awkward too, right? Because it's like, okay, if my opponent's turn is like. It depends on the Stoneforge Mystic deck, right? Because if they can afford to hold their mana up to do this combination, like, put it back, then it's good. If they can't, it's punishing. It's very awkward.
I don't think that they're going to play around Assassin's Trophy. I think you're just going to put that Batterskull into play. I mean, maybe you're playing against Jund and they have Culligan's Command, maybe they would consider it.
Yeah, you might play around it a little bit more, but what I meant more is that, like, let's say I Abrupt Decay the Germ, right? Like, you go put in, I go Decay. Then on my turn, I progress board. If your turn is buy back Skull, so next turn you can put it in again, I don't know if that's like a play that a lot of time you can afford to do, assuming I have like a decent curve draw, sure. Right? Like if I have like a Goyf into something, like I have a Goyf into Decay answering your Germ into like Planeswalker, that could be a very punishing thing, or into like maybe a Bloodbraid Elf or even like a Huntmaster, right? So, and like you said, it does kind of actually weirdly plays into the Huntmaster flipping to kill a Stoneforge activation line we talked about. At the beginning,
it also talks.
I don't know what is better though.
Yeah,
it's so awkward.
Trey, it also talks about your love of how much better these Blood Raid Elves are. When you play Assassin's Trophy over Decay, your Blood Raid Elves get better too.
That's true.
What is your opinion on those two cards?
Well, I think that it is close. I mean, if I were doing it, I would probably play a split because I can imagine situations where I would want both. And you have the ability with a versatility of answers in Jund to be able to do that. And so I would probably lean towards playing a split.
Well, let's move on from Jund because go ahead, Mason.
One last thing I want to say is that I think the tipping point for me might be if I think there are going to be a lot of like burn fast aggro decks that could take advantage of the land, right? And then also a lot of force negations in the format. I like the idea of having an abrupt decay because it kind of stops both those things. But it's like a contextual thing. Like, I don't know if next weekend, I wouldn't quite expect that as of right now. So I might not want to play that. I might want to play like two Assassin's Trophies. But it's also like a nice moment of, like you said, kind of reassessing what your game plan is with Jund and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So
one of the things is I love this list, right? But you two have both made, I think that in my heart of hearts, I would typically split them. Like, I want two of these effect. And I also, to me, there's a third option. There's also Maelstrom Pulse as a, you know, if I would rather play Maelstrom Pulse or Assassin's Trophy. I think that Assassin's Trophy wins out because of the Tron matchup over Maelstrom Pulse most of the time. But it is, you know, I think that there are three cards that kind of fit into the slot. And, you know, how many Colgan's Command also impacts which one of these you play.
For sure, yeah. It's hard to play Maelstrom Pulse and a bunch of Colgan's Command. So that does make sense. I forgot about Maelstrom Pulse. I guess I had, like, written off in my head for mana reasons, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, things are starting to get pretty crowded at three in this list with all the things that are being played,
especially once you play Seasoned Pyromancer. Let's talk about another Seasoned Pyromancer Colgan's Command deck though, Trey, because your first deck also has those cards, so clearly you and I are on a similar page as far as the things we're interested in doing in Modern.
Yeah, so this is my hopeful list of a deck, and this was Rakdos Midrange that John Lim finished seventh at SCG Dallas with. And this deck list is four Dreadhorde Arcanists, four Seasoned Pyromancer, two Hazoreth the Fervent, three Bedlam Reveler, two Chandra Acolyte of Flame, three Liliana of the Veil, three Fatal Push, three Inquisition, one Lightning Axe, four Lightning Bolt, four Thoughtseize, two Colligan's Command, three Blood Moon, and 22 lands. And then sideboard is two Nihil Spellbomb, two Surgical Extraction, three Collective Brutality, an additional Colligan's Command, three Pillage, two Plague Engineers, one Chandra Torture Defiance, and one Kalidus Traitor of Get.
So I have never seen a deck, Trey, where I look at it and I'm like, I think, how is this deck playing 22 lands with its mana curve? And then you realize it's using Seasoned Pyromancer to its ultimate effect.
Galaxy Brain.
It's like, I'm always discarding spells. I'm going to get that fourth land every time. And also, Seasoned Pyromancers are going to be gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, like, you know, when you have Dreadhorde Arcanist, you have the ability to do that, right? Like, you can just pitch all your stuff out and then get value from Bedlam Reveler and Dreadhorde Arcanist from discarding all these spells. Like, you just get so much benefit from actually taking that line of play.
I know this sounds crazy, so talk me off this very crazy hill that I'm about to get on. But is there a one mana give your creatures trample or something cantrip that
crash
you
could be through.
Yeah, can you not just play Crash Through in this deck over some of the other one mana spells that kind of look dinky when you're playing 22 lands? Like, to me, I could like cut a Blood Moon, cut one of the one mana discard spells, play Crash Through, and, you know, be really excited about playing this 22 land deck in Black, Red, and Modern. Maybe that's like the wrong direction, Trey, but
yeah, that seems like a different deck.
Well, not really, right? Because you're just trying to get the most value out of your Dreadhorde Arcanist. Like, if I have this card that's giving my Hazoret's Trample, for example, you know, that's also refilling my hand for, you know, later in the game with Dreadhorde Arcanist, it feels like it fits the deck better. But that was my first thought when I saw this deck. But, you know, when you saw this deck, what was the thing that excited you the most about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's less of a necessity to have to lean on Path with Hogak out of it. You know, also people are playing Stoneforge Mystics and things like that. Same thing. You have removal spells that you don't need to be leaning on Path as heavily. So like the Mardu Pyromancer decks and those kinds of things, it's not as necessary to go in that direction. So what does that free you up to? And, you know, you were talking about cutting a Blood Moon. I think that actually having the Blood Moons is one of the things that's interesting to me about this deck, is that that's really good against Jund. There's all these people that are leaning on Tron. Or there's all of the value lands that are in Wurza. Like, I think getting access to Blood Moon main deck is something that I think is particularly interesting about this deck, and a reason to be playing the Rakdos version versus like the Mardu versions.
Yeah. Also nice against Titan Shift.
Yeah.
By the way, on the path point too, path, like, even though you don't have to have path in order to kill a Hogak now, thanks to Stoneforge Mystic, path is like still at an all time high, right? Which does allow you to kind of skimp on lands a little bit too. If you assume, like, if you're getting like really deep, right? You're like, okay, I'm a 22 land deck, but I know I'm going to get path like at least, you know, once a round or whatever, like every other round. So, like, if you play leagues, you run into Tron and path decks a lot. At least I have. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing where like those decks are playing path because they're playing white for Stoneforge. It's not just because they like need path because path is like necessary for the format. It's just that if you're going to be playing Stoneforge, you're going to be playing path because it's the best removal spell you have access to. But there's no reason, I think, right now, if you're this type of a Dreadhorde Arcanist deck, to stretch your mana for the purposes of playing path. Yeah. I think that the benefit you get from Blood Moon is better than the benefit you get from path right now.
One of the things that I wanted to ask about this deck, you know, Dreadhorde Arcanist on a four of Thoughtseize deck really interested me in like a really fair format that, like, because the way that you beat fair decks is with these very extreme combo decks that are pretty, usually typically pretty easy to break up. So if you can go turn one Thoughtseize, break up your combo for a turn, play Dreadhorde Arcanist, a lot of times they're just like, I actually just can't beat this. Like, yeah, I'm going to get Thoughtseized again for free. And then you're going to have the ability to, you know, play a high-impact spell, whether it's Chandra, Acolyte of Flame, or Liliana of the Veil, or even Seerons and Pyromancer, and really break up anything that I could be doing to try and beat these fair decks, including this deck, right? Like, this is a fair deck, but this is a fair deck that has a very clear game plan against some of the unfair things that people could be doing right now.
Right, and I don't know if seven discard spells is right. I don't know if you want to cut a discard spell for something else, but, you know, I mean, I guess if you count Colligan's Command, you have nine discard spells, but yeah. That's a lot, you know. So there might be some opportunity there.
If you can lose Liliana, you have 12.
Right, but there's just a lot about what's going on here that I like a lot, and the idea of even playing into that. Okay, we're going to play a maximum amount of discard spells, but we're going to play Seasoned Pyromancer where we can discard the extra ones in order to get value later. Like, I think that this just deck has a really clean design and plans for what it is that it's doing.
Pillage is a card that I've been really interested in figuring out like a really good home for since losing to it at the Grand Prix. You know, it being able to destroy an artifact or a land and it can't be regenerated is a pretty big game, Trey.
Yeah, especially, you know, those welding jars are going to look pretty silly to that pillage.
Yeah, you tell me about it. That was the first thing, just like, dump my entire hand. Pillage. What just happened to me? What just happened?
What a pounding for Tron, right? Your main deck Blood Moons and your sideboard pillages, like, destroy target deck, pass the turn.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about this deck before we move on to your next deck? Chandra, Acolyte of Flame is one that really excites me as kind of like a red Snapcaster Mage for this black-red deck.
It's like, it's two Snapcaster Mages.
No, I think that's great. And then also, you know, just again, applying additional pressure, getting those little elementals, get all your Seasoned Pyromancer elementals and these guys' elementals and just get in there, start messing around.
Sure.
I think this could be better, Jund. I was talking to Trey about this when we played some TFT on Monday or Sunday night, one of the two. And I'm not willing to like put my flag and like die on a hill or anything. So, you know, don't at me on Twitter. But I could see like an evolve, like people working on this style of deck with like just red black and not using the green cards and it potentially being better for the Jund, at least contextually in some formats. So
people have tried
I'm very excited about this.
People have tried this a lot in the history of Magic. They tried to cut green in Rakdos in Standard. They tried to cut green. I mean, people just don't like green cards. And, you know, if there's a person that I know doesn't like green cards, that's going to snap go to any deck that doesn't have green cards. It's Trey McLarnon. So
yeah. Also, we might be able to get some Skelementals in here. Let's do it.
Unearth.
You know what else? Yeah, Skelemental is Blood Red Elf fam. What up?
That's true. By the way, Bedlam Reveler in this deck is so hot. Like, oh, I know we kind of skipped over it, but like, it is like a threat. It refills our hand. There's a lot of things this deck does to be like, to kind of compensate for not having Bloodbraid Elf that I really like. I don't know. I like this deck a lot.
Next up, we do have Dredge. Trey, why don't you talk about this deck for us?
What's interesting about this is basically a pretty basic stock Dredge. The list that I picked is the one that won the Classic in Dallas. It's 4 Bloodghast, 2 Golgari Thug, 4 Narcomoeba, 4 Prized Amalgam, 4 Stinkweed Imp, 2 Conflagrate, 4 Tome Scour, 4 Cathartic Reunion, 4 Life from the Loam, 4 Creeping Chill, 4 Shriekhorn, 20 lands. And then sideboard is one blast zone, two alpine moon, one dark blast, three lightning axe, three nature's claim, one abrupt decay, two ancient grudge, and two shenanigans. So, I mean, this is, you know, fairly normal dredge overall, just with Tome Scour taking the place of Faithless Looting. I mean, as far as the main deck is concerned, there's not really a lot else going on. You know, I do think that this is a situation where, particularly for this weekend, that Graveyard Hate was going to be lower than at any other time because Hogak Summer was over, and that's a good place for dredge to be in a general sense, and that this deck, you know, losing Faithless Looting is a loss. There's no way to deny that, but there, what's interesting to me about dredge in its place right now is that the rest of its power pieces are all still there. All of the rest of its engine, all of the rest of its synergies are there, and there are a lot of options to try to fill that Faithless Looting slot. A Tome Scour is one people are exploring a lot right now, but it's not the only thing that there is. I mean, there are options. You know, you're playing blue, you could be playing Hedron Crab, you could be playing Stitcher Supplier, you could be playing Memory Sluice.
Desperate Ravings.
I mean, and there's not, you know, there's something to that too. But like, you know, ones that are interesting to me, Tome Scour is interesting, right? Its fail rate is it puts two cards in the graveyard and you draw a card, right? That's as bad as it gets. You know, Memory Sluice is its fail rate is it puts four cards in the graveyard, right? And then on the high end, Tome Scour can put seven cards in the graveyard. You mill two and then dredge a Stinkweed up. And then...
You mean Thought Scour?
Or Tome Scour.
Does Tome Scour draw a card too?
No. I'm sorry. I was thinking of Thought Scour, not Tome Scour.
Yeah, I got really confused for a second.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're good.
Thought Scour is another consideration as well.
Man, if Tome Scour drew a card, that'd be like...
Yeah, I thought it did for a second. I was like, wait, why are people complaining about this card? It's like a draw 10 in the deck.
So, I'm so confused. So can we actually... I just want your opinion, Trey, because this is a deck that Matt Kling lost to during the challenge, I believe. It was another round. Anyway, we played against Tome Scour deck. So talk to me about all of these one drops that people are trying out. You know, we have Insulate Neonate. This is a Insulate Neonate. I mean, obviously, when you had more great dredgers, that card was, you know, everything this deck ever wanted. With the decrease in great dredgers, it loses some value, right? You know, Cathartic Reunion is that two drop that kind of lets you have your explosive draws no matter kind of what you do. But talking about Tome Scour, talking about Shriekhorn, talk to me about, you know, you just said Thought Scour. I hadn't thought of that before.
Stitcher Supplier
is one I have not seen be successful yet, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it.
Memory Sluice is the other one, which is from Shadowmoor, which is the black blue hybrid mana. Target player puts four cards in the graveyard and has Conspire. So you can tap two creatures of those colors and cast it again, basically.
So what one do you think is correct? I mean, we see more. We have Forgotten Caves in this list, kind of make your Life from the Loams a little bit better with your other dredge cards. What's going on? Like, what, this deck clearly isn't dead. We said it wouldn't be dead.
So traditionally, you know, the idea of being able to have blue mana early is something I'm certainly concerned with for dredge. You know, that has been a situation that's not always been easy to do with what's going on. I mean, you can play more of the like five color lands. You can play more of those kinds of things in order to help that mana. But, you know, it does make your mana harder to be able to have blue mana reliably. I mean, I've played plenty of dredge decks where Prized Amalgam being cast was not even a thing you could really do. That just wasn't a thing, and because of blue mana specifically. So I do lean towards wanting to be able to more consistently and effectively cast my things without having to make my mana base insane. And so I lean towards probably looking at something like Stitcher Supplier or Memory Sluice. And possibly some combination of those because they help each other. You know, if you can cast a Stitcher Supplier and then recur a Narc Amoeba and then you can cast a Memory Sluice for 8, like that's pretty powerful and not really trading a lot of points of damage. So those are things that are interesting to me because then I don't have to like jam a bunch of extra blue mana sources into my deck.
This deck has gotten away from playing Dark Blast in the main deck. Do you think that's just correct right now with the kind of the power and toughness of creatures? Or do you think the number of Noble Hierarchs and Birds of Paradise makes it so you might consider doing that?
I mean, that's always kind of an oscillating thing. You know, I haven't seen a big reason with what's being played right now to justify it, but that may shift, you know, as some of these green decks kind of pop up to doing, you know, a lot better and more consistently, then I think that there's a reason to do that. But, you know, against things like, you know, Burn and Wurza and Titan Shift and Jund. I mean, I don't really want Dark Blast. So, you know, I definitely don't want it against Stoneforge decks.
For can the I put you in the spin zone real quick and put Stitcher Supplier, Dark Blaster, and Stitcher Supplier? Boom!
Oh, that's kind of hot.
Dredge
no, it
three,
is good.
Draw nine. Welcome to the spin zone. What kind of car wax do you want?
No, it is good. And so, you know, I could certainly see something possibly where we're looking at some kind of mixture of those things. But, you know, my first instinct is to probably try, you know, two Stitcher Supplier, two Memory Sluice, and see how it feels as far as in that slot and get an idea. Because none of those cards are particularly exciting in the way that, like, it was easy, right, with looting, right? Like, it's just four looting, move on from there. Like, there's no real question about what that's going to be. But I'm curious about some of those things.
That's something I don't get. I see talked about a lot. Like, doesn't the dredge deck just get like way worse because in the middle of the game you don't have those insane turns it used to?
Well, I mean, you still have a lot of recursion, right? Because due to you're still a blood gas prize amalgam deck that like doesn't need to deal that much damage due to creeping chill with your conflagrates, right? So like that part of the mid game doesn't change. They still have to answer your board, or else they're just going to die to the creatures, and even if they take too much damage from the creatures, your Tome Scourer can just deal them 15 out of nowhere, right? Like, in the form of, like, a Creeping Chill plus Conflagrate, which is my reason that I like Tome Scourer, right? Is it fits your, like, has the highest impact on your game plan.
Yeah, but I think that's why Memory Sluice is interesting as a Tome Scourer replacement, because it's four instead of five every time, while making your mana easier. And then, you know, tapping a Narcomoeba and a Narcomoeba and a Stitcher Supplier or two Narcomoebas in order to make it eight on a, you know, to power it out on particular turns, I think is pretty big game.
It could be a reason that you might cut Shriekhorn even, right? Where, like, you're like, actually the best thing to be doing is Stitcher Supplier in this, and then maybe the six from Shriekhorn isn't worth it.
I think Shriekhorn, partially because of the mana like we just talked about.
Yeah.
And it's like if you play it turn one,
they're both
it's
black, more... it doesn't matter, right?
I guess so, but you're, well, if we're playing the, what's the card called, Trey, the one that has the weird tap mechanic?
Memory Sluice.
Does Memory Sluice, would we play blue still in any way at all? We're not. I guess my next question.
You have to for Prized Amalgam in some way, but.
Yeah, I mean, but you could greatly like reduce what it is. We'd probably still play some number of City of Brass to.
Yeah, I guess the mana base just needs to get reworked no matter what, because before you had like Faithless Looting and the Neonate and Shriekhorn. So you just wanted to have red on one a bunch. I guess if you rework your mana base, it wouldn't matter. I'm hesitant to cut those cards for Shriekhorn. I think Shriekhorn's very good in the deck, and maybe that's right. With that card, can I like mill two blood gas and recast in the same turn? Or do my creatures need to not be summoning sick? How does that mechanic work?
It's not a matter of them being summoning sick, but it's at the time that you cast it. You have to conspire at the time that you cast it.
Oh, at the time. I'm sorry.
Right. Okay. It's not like flashback.
Gotcha. I thought it was like flashback.
You are making me think about this, Trey. Like, I legitimately am thinking about trying this deck in a league this week without Shriekhorn and with Stitcher Supplier in that. Because like with Blood Gas, it might give you enough where you draw it late and you'll Blood Gas that you can conspire really easily. I'm interested in this now.
Yeah.
And on this,
can we play all of them? Can we play like a bunch of one drops? Like,
well, the I mean,
like maybe some Venge Vines.
If you like decided that you didn't want Golgari Thug, but I don't know that you have enough dredgers then.
Yeah, I don't know if you want. Yeah, I guess there's like you're just kind of limited on slots.
But you could go back to like the one Shriekhorn plan that the deck played in the past, right?
Sure, that's reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, but I might want, instead of the one Shriekhorn, I mean, I might want the one Ravings just for that one random flashback that you can get in the middle.
I mean, genuinely. I was like half memeing when I first talked about that card with Rest in Peace people. But like, you know, I think that card has something to it when thinking about like, and maybe this is just the decks I play. So maybe this is just like a symptom of modern and like my perception shapes my reality of it. But like, I was always felt like I had a pretty reasonable time against Dredge. And then they would have a turn where like, they dredged five from an imp, and they cast Faithless Looting from the graveyard, and they drew eight more cards for the dredging, and that was the part where like I was kind of at parity, and then suddenly it was like, I cannot keep up with this. And Ravings lets you do that, sort of, right? Like, drawing two cards in the later game and then discarding one at random is basically redraw six. And since it has flashback, it can get milled over. And if I have blue cards already, it's probably too expensive on the front half to be worth it, but I think it's reasonable. Like, I think that mid-game push is something the deck kind of needs. But maybe that's also, maybe when I'm playing. So this, maybe that how it lines up.
The problem is like, I want something like Shriekhorn or Thought or Tomescour. Like, I want something that's milling me before that happens, so that my draw two are dredgers. Because if my draw two are dredgers, then like, I don't actually care what I discard, right? But the problem is like, you're playing this two drop. I think that the spot that you're actually
like one or two.
Well, the problem is the spot that you're actually competing with is Cathartic Reunion, and there's just no chance I'm going to play a Desperate Ravings over a Cathartic Reunion. But there's also just not a chance that I'm playing Desperate Ravings over a Tormenting Voice in these kind of decks. So,
sure, I guess it's very similar to Tormenting Voice. I don't know.
I mean, the draw is obviously the flashback, right? That's
the deal. Yeah, it's probably just worse than Tormenting Voice, but I would be interested to see. I don't know. It seemed fine, but it might just seem fine. This doesn't actually, when you play enough games, come out well enough. So
the non-committal answer from Mason.
If I was ever going to play one, I mean, I don't know that I would ever want more than one, but it is something that I am at least intrigued in as a one of.
Yeah, I was thinking one or two, so I don't know.
Let's talk about those X1s that we were talking about earlier when we were talking about Dark Blast. We have a 4 of Noble Hierarch, 3 of Birds of Paradise deck. Mason, talk to me about these X1s.
Yeah, sure. So here's this green-white mid-range deck that I'm kind of hopeful in playing. So it's 3 Bird of Paradise, 4 Noble Hierarch, 1 Quasali Pride Mage, which could be a Knight of Autumn. Kind of forgot that card existed. 2 Scavenging Ooze, 4 Stoneforge Mystic, 1 Azusa, 4 Courser Crucifix, 1 Eternal Witness, 1... Tyler's Tracker, 1 Ramunap Excavator, 4 Knight of the Reliquary, 4 Path, 1 Sword of Fire and Ice, 4 Collected Company, 1 Batterskull. Then for the land the key land you have are Bog, Township, 4 Ghost Quarters, and 2 Canopies, along with a mixture of fetch lands and basics and a temple garden. Then in your sideboard, you have an Aven Mind Censor, an Eidolon of the Rhetoric, a Knight of Autumn, in this updated version, Linvala, Keeper of Silence, Shalai, Voice of Plenty, an EE, 3 Veil of Summer, 2 Dampening Sphere, 2 Rest in Peace, 2 Stony Silence, and you could play Surgical Extraction of a Rest in Peace, which I think is probably better.
I got some hot takes.
I believe
takes.
Your decklist on the screen has it. So,
I got some hot takes. So first of all, I think Quasali Pride Mage is currently underrated in Modern and is a better card in the main deck than Knight of Autumn by like a pretty substantial margin in most decks. Quasali Pride Mage is one of, like, when I saw this list, that was the first thing I was like, this is so much better than like the other Reclamation Stage Knight of Autumn stuff that people are playing. This is where I want to be with my Stoneforge Mystic deck over a Knight of Autumn with my Batterskull. So tell me why you thought Knight of Autumn.
I just forgot the card. Like, when I built this, so like, I guess I'll kind of talk about why we had this deck here. So this morning I was trying to think about like, what should I be playing in Modern? What should I be doing? And I was thinking about some of the decks that I think are good right now. Some of the decks I think that are good are like Tron, Eldrazi Tron, mid-range decks like Jund, the red-black deck we talked about, Stoneforge Mystic decks. I think those decks are pretty good. And then I've heard rumblings that Death Shadow is actually good right now. And when I think about all those decks, I thought, man, the green-white mid-range deck of old was like really good against like those decks in the past. And it got some new cards with like Veil of Summer and I forget the other one's name that's in the deck right now. Knight of Autumn is one, but I forgot about that at the time. But there was another card that kind of pulled me towards it. And then it also got Stoneforge Mystic, right?
Sure.
Before, the deck had to play like Voice of Resurgence, which is like a card that's fine in some matchups, but a lot of time it was just kind of like an annoyance. And Stoneforge Mystic is a real powerhouse. Your deck wears Swords and Batterskull really effectively. I was like, man, this seems powerful. So I wanted to update the deck list, and Quasali Pride Mage was a card that I thought seemed good contextual in the format. It might still be right. Honestly, I haven't given enough time to see if I should maybe play a 1-1 split or maybe just play more Quasali Pride Mage's main deck. But I think that card is really good. I agree with you. It is slept on. It's very powerful. And that's kind of what got me to this, is that like contextually, I think the format right now, this deck is really good against what's going on. It's really bad against stack-based combo, but we've all kind of agreed tonight to be bad against stack-based combo. So, and everyone seems to be doing that. And I think
I actually don't know if that's true about Trey's deck.
Well, the discard spell decks are good against them.
Yeah, I was
right?
saying,
and you're kind of hoping that and Stoneforge Mystic keep them down. That's what I was about to say.
But I have a question, because sure. I saw this list and there's so many cards that just seem so, like, we're playing Noble Hierarch, we're playing Birds of Paradise, so yep. It almost feels like, you know, like the white is basically free in this deck because of Noble, and you could have another free color if you wanted. Like, talk to me about, you know, you have Azusa, you have Courser of Crucifix. Like, what's the reason? So if I played Naya, I could get access to, you know, a Johnny Vengeant as a really big spell. I could get access to, you know, a certain two mana planeswalker with my Horizon Canopies and my, you know, my stuff. Like, if I play Bant, I get access to Spell Queller. I get access to, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor if I want it, you know, as a one of. I get access to, you know, a bunch of blue white cards and maybe even Force of Negation. Like, tell me why green white.
Sure. So I think those decks I think are totally reasonable, and I think you need to reconstruct some of the creatures you're playing. Like, it might be a little harder to play Knight of the Reliquary, like in the
sure.
Well, I know Knight of the Reliquary ban has been a thing. It hasn't really been a successful thing ever, so I'm gonna
that. Casey Bloodworth, top 8 states with Bant Helm, so
rest in peace. And so, you know, like there's a lot of different things you can do, but specifically for green white, there's a couple reasons. One, it is kind of just easier mode on the mana. You're better against aggressive decks like Burn and things like that that are going around. Like, having the simpler mana base makes it so that thing isn't as much of a problem. It's easier to cast your spells consistently. We're taking less instant damage. And then I think it's kind of under, like, I think green and white has a lot of really powerful things going on in those color combinations between cards in the sideboard and the main deck and, like, these utility bullet creatures we have in on combination with Collected Company. And I think Collected Company is the real thing that draws me towards this deck and not the other decks. So, like, I think if I really wanted to play a Spellqueller deck, there are other Spellqueller type decks I could be playing. I don't want to have to play that right now. That's kind of why I'm moving towards this direction. And then if I was playing, like, a Johnny Venture type deck, it makes it hard to play Collected Company. And Collected Company, I feel, is one of those big power cards, and we get to it so quickly, and we kind of loop it. Also, by doing this, the number one reason I would say that I've kind of talked around because I wanted to get towards it is we have a good Tron matchup. I get to play 4 Ghost Quarters in my main deck. Now, if I were to play a red deck, a Naya deck with Rin and 6, I could maybe still make that work, but it's going to be a lot harder when I'm a 3-color deck, even if the red's just for Rin and 6, right? Like, if we just say we're going to play Rin and 6 and maybe, like, a sideboard X card that we think is positioned really well right now, like maybe Smash Smithereens or something like that, or Wear Tear, that's fine. It's still going to be a little bit harder to work in those Ghost Quarters, and it's going to come up more often. This deck is built around being able to use those 4 Ghost Quarters, not have them be a downside, and it plays one of them in the main deck, like Azusa Excavator combo, in order to really punish those decks. So, and then you have, like, Azusa Corsair is like a card draw thing, so, etc.
Trey?
Well, I think there are two things. One, you know, if the format in Modern is going more fair, you're just being, like, the fairest fair deck ever, where you're just out-fairing the other fair decks. And that I think that the benefit that you get from this, and it's one of the things that you're kind of touching on, is that this deck always plays, right? Like, you're not going to have stumbles on your mana. You're not going to have a time when you drew, you know, a Sacred Foundry and can't play a bird. You're not going to have any of these situations where you're, like, having to stumble because something happened because you've stretched your mana in some way. Like, you are always going to do what it is that you're setting out to do every time because of the consistency that you get from the mana creatures.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. And the Corsair, like, I would say the biggest flaw to this deck not doing that is the thing that happens with every deck that doesn't have cantrips or some way to smooth out, right? Is that this deck lacks a way to control your draws outside of Corsair, Kruphix, and fetch lands. Like, Corsair, Kruphix helps move through lands. With Corsair, Kruphix, and either Reliquary, you can reset the top of your deck a couple times. So there are slight ways to do it, but they're a lot of work, right? Like, you want to do that only if you really have to do that. But I would say that the biggest flaw to this deck is that, but I don't know if I can add elements to the deck and still do what I like about the deck, which is kind of crushing some of the decks.
Yeah, but this deck, if being a lot of work, is something you sign up for, right? Like, this is a deck that if you're going to register this deck for an event, you bring your lunch pail. You're like, you're ready to go to work.
Yeah, I meant more like when it comes to, like, constructing the deck and, like, having a mana base that works and that kind of stuff and still having the spells that we want and having the velocity. Because I think the other thing about this deck is because you play 7 birds, which are bad to Rin and 6, don't get me wrong. And I'm really hesitant to play X1s. I think it's actually one of the scarier parts about this is before your Jund matchup was really good, now you have all these liability cards, and Rin and 6 can go really long, and they have Bloodbraid Elf now. So a lot of things have changed. But you go really fast. You play some really powerful cards. And either Reliquary is quite strong. Tyler's Tracker is quite strong. So if you can play these cards early, they will take over those kind of games. So, and then we know Stoneforge Mystic is, like, a powerful card. This is just one of the shells that I haven't also seen anyone talk about when it comes to Stoneforge Mystic. Honestly, no one has talked about this deck at all anymore. So,
yeah, I think that for me, if I'm going to play Devil's Advocate, like, yeah. Trey talked about this being, like, the best fair deck. I think this is just a fair deck that has a bad gen matchup. And I just would not be interested in playing that kind of deck. Like, it's funny because, like, Knight of the Reliquary historically is, like, pretty decent against Jund decks, but I just don't know that this deck is good against this version of Jund. I mean, especially on the on the draw. Like, you are pretty weak to Jund on the draw with this deck. Like,
yeah, Rin 6 is a serious problem.
I mean, not even only that, but like, yeah, they have six one mana destroy spells for most of your deck. They have six 1 mana discard spells. Like, it's just tough to play this style of deck against the way that Jund is constructed now. I don't know, Trey. You have something to say on that?
No, I know that you've got Sword of Fire and Ice here right now. I would probably want Feast and Famine
for that reason. That was my next question: is do you consider playing different swords to help with different matchups? Because this deck is actually one of those decks that I might even consider like playing one extra equipment in.
Mm-hmm. I think you can do that. I went with Feast of Famine over Feast. I went with Fire and Ice over Feast and Famine because I felt like the deck needed a little bit of additional card draw and smooth out, kind of like talked about earlier. I also liked the ping aspect, like the do 2 damage, I thought might be nice for the deck because the deck does lack removal. It has the 4 paths and then your Ewit a path line. So like while you do have strong removal, you don't have like a lot of it. So that's kind of where I was leaning there. But I think that like one thing when playing Stoneforge Mystic decks is trying to figure out what swords fit best in here. Like I imagine Light and Shadow is also very good in this deck, right? Like, it protects you from all the removal that isn't Bolt, but then it protects you from Bolt by giving it +2/+2, right? And then you can buy back every creature in your deck.
Yeah, that was my thought. Light and Shadow is the one that I was like, this deck seems like a Light and Shadow deck to me.
Yeah, and it totally might be. I have played 0 games with this deck. It's something I thought about this morning, and I, like, believed enough in and wanted to talk about on the podcast. So it totally could be that that's what we should be doing. My gut reaction was just, we lack raw card advantage, let's Fire and Ice. But I do agree that, like, traditionally, like, recently in Modern, my main decks have been, like, Light and Shadow and Feast and Famine with Sword of Fire and Ice in the sideboard for the most part, minus the Eldrazi decks.
Mason, I think they do use that. One more thing before we move on. I really like the fact that you're playing 5 Exalted Creatures in your Batterskull deck. Is that something they actually cared about when you were thinking about this?
Yeah, it's one of the things I like, actually. It's one of the things I liked about Green-White Eldrazi was, like, oh, like, your Nobles make it so, like, you're deploying quicker and your Batterskulls win the matchup. And Lord knows Quasali Primate wins the Batterskull matchup in a lot of ways, right? It sort of invalidates their Batterskull until it, like, you need to kill it. And then if they're like, aha, I'll put my Batterskull in, it's like, well, I'm going to win this race at the moment, so I'm going to keep hitting you. And then if you want to put in your other sword, I'll kill it then. So I like having all the Exalted Creatures. And I think the sideboard also has a lot of really strong cards. We mentioned Veil Summer earlier. I think that is a big get for this deck and a big help in those kind of matchups that we talked about earlier, like the jungle ones. So.
Trey, anything else you want to say on this one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not sure what role this plays in the metagame, but I know from the historical context of this deck that I underestimating it is a bad idea, that it does a lot more things than what it looks like it does as far as the collection of cards.
Yeah, I would be interested.
It looks really bad.
It looked horrible every time.
I think that Elvish Rejuvenator is a card that this deck might... I think this might end up being a little bit more of a... Like, the Terravor decks from past that were
what's
like...
a Terravor? you're just gonna go like, you know,
it's a bad Knight of the Reliquary. It's a bad Knight of the Reliquary. There was a green white Knight of the Reliquary deck in the past that played Terravor too, and I think that you can kind of make this deck. They kind of mentioned it on game, I don't know if it was this week or last week, kind of missing Wasteland, like, as the thing. But it could be that you could like play something like Field of Ruin and find a way to make I don't know.
I would say I've thought about Field of Ruin a lot with this deck. I don't want to play too many lands because we're playing so many birds. Like, sure. We basically, like, if you count Nobles as half a mana source because they're half a pump spell sometimes, sure. You're playing 28 lands essentially in your deck, and that's like being super generous or whatever. But Ramanov Excavator with Ghost Quarter is a way. The problem is that right now, basics are at a high because there's like a lot of snow things happening, I feel like. And a lot of like two color decks or like slice splash decks, but you can run people out. Like it does happen. So
Trey, what were you gonna say?
I mean, I was trying not to talk over you because I think that's rude and bad for the broadcast. But Terravor is certainly way worse than bad Knight of the Reliquary. it's more closely is bad Tarmogoyf. So for the listeners that don't know, Terravor is green colorless. It's a Lurgoyf, so in the Tarmogoyf family. And its power and toughness is XX, and its power and toughness is equal to the number of land cards in all graveyards. So not even your graveyard, but all graveyards like Tarmogoyf, but just for lands, and it has trample. So it is Horrible Knight of the Reliquary and bad Tarmogoyf.
That deck played Armageddon, to be fair.
Yeah, it did. But so that my comment is I cannot abide Terravor being called bad Knight of the Reliquary.
It is bad Knight of the Reliquary. It's factual.
That card's so good with Ghost Quarter. Bop, bop, bop.
It's not wrong. It actually might be better in this deck if we're being honest.
Bop, bop, bop.
I think we're really downplaying the role that the activated ability on Knight of the Reliquary has it being playable in Modern.
That is a huge, like, that is a huge part of this. Like, getting access to main deck Graveyard Hate is also nice between, like, Bajuka Bog and Skews. Like, sure. When you run into the Dredge decks, you can beat them as long as you don't get conflagrated out. Although they didn't have Creeping Chill back then. That might change the matchup a lot. But you do have a lot of incidental life gain, which is something I really like about this deck. Your burn matchup is a buy. And it's a super buy if you ever draw Corsair Crucifix. I don't know if you ever stuck Corsair Crucifix against burn. Actually, Spencer probably hasn't Titan Shift. I know Trey hasn't because he doesn't play green cards. It is a delight.
Trey has cast Life from Loans many times, my friend. So like
that's not a green card. That doesn't count. How dare you. That's not even a magic card. That's like a weird Shadowverse card in the game.
Let's talk about four color Julian really quick.
Yeah, so four color War and or Julian Henry. Shout out to Julian. This is the deck that's super exciting. I'm going to read off Harlan Fierce deck, but I want to talk about a lot of different things this deck is doing, but this is the one that won the open, and Harlan's been one of the main pushers along with Canister with this deck. So three Goblin Engineer, four Urza Lord Heartificer, two Galvanic Blast, three Worm Invention, four Mistress Bauble, four Mox Opal, a single Welding Jar, four Arkham's Astrolabe, two Chromatic Star, one Nihil Spell Bomb, two Pithing Needle, one Pyrite Spell Bomb, one Ichor Wellspring, two Sword of the Meek, four Thopter Foundry, an Ensnaring Bridge, a Mystic Forge, mana including Snowlands and a Inventor's Fair when it comes to that kind of stuff, sideboard, three Ceremonious Rejection, two Fatal Push, two Thoughtseize, three Assassin's Trophies, two Collective Brutalities, a single Dampening Sphere, and two Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas. This is probably the deck with the highest ceiling in Modern right now. I think we all kind of know that. We're all kind of waiting for someone to figure out and break it. And there's so many different things we can do. So I wanted to just kind of talk about this openly with all three of us. Do we kind of like what's going on here? Do we kind of like what's going on with Stoneforge Mystic? Do we kind of like what's going on with maybe Stoneforge Mystic and a blue-white shell? So playing like Psy, Urza, just kind of like a more mid-range game plan that has access to the combo. Where are we at? What are we thinking, Trey?
I like this deck a lot. And it's a thing that like Goblin Engineer was a card that I wasn't sold on when I saw it, and then I've seen it in play against me a lot, and I hate it. I hate everything about it because it's so good, especially in these decks. It's preposterous how consistent it is and how many problems it creates, especially because like normally against this type of thing, what you would want to do is just blow up their artifacts and just like, oh, I've got removal for their artifacts and whatever, and Goblin Engineer's like, cool, just bringing it back. Just bringing all those pieces right back in. And it creates an inevitability with this deck that's really frustrating. I think these shells are moving in a really strong direction. I do like this kind of like four color direction that it's in. I don't know if Stoneforge Mystic has a place in it. I know that I've been seeing some mid-range experimentation with that, but I don't know. From what I have seen, the deck is pretty consistent at assembling its combo, and I don't know that it needs to play on a fair axis that way.
Fun thing I watched on stream this week, if you have a Goblin Engineer and you sacrifice a Nihil Spellbomb, the Nihil Spellbomb reads that when it goes to the graveyard, you can pay a black. So you don't actually need to sacrifice it with itself. You can just sacrifice it with a Goblin Engineer, pay the black, exile their graveyard, draw a card, and get the card you want. Chow! Boom, 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 boom.
Brain.
Yep. All same thing with Thopter Foundry, too. You can sack it and make a Thopter, draw a card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. Chromatic Star also is when it goes to the graveyard. So, you know, this card has some synergy with this deck.
Ichor Wellspring too. The deck does a lot of like, you know, if you play Stoneforge Mystic, you need to change some of these slots. Like you definitely are not supposed to be playing Ichor Wellspring at that point.
I think Stoneforge Mystic is so bad in this deck.
If you play Stoneforge, you just become a different deck.
Can we just talk about that really quick? Like,
sure.
Are you pro Stoneforge Mystic in War?
I am pro the idea of Stoneforge Mystic and Wur if we fundamentally change what the deck is doing. I do not like taking Julian or Carlin's deck, taking out our Goblin Engineer, which is basically like better Demonic Tutor, and shoving in Stoneforge Mystic.
No, come on. I had to get on Spencer for worst.
Yeah, for so worst better Demonic Tutor.
I certainly have to call you to task for better Demonic Tutor.
Yeah, in the deck, it's better Demonic. So Demonic Tutor puts the card in my hand and I have to spend mana. It puts my sword in the graveyard so I can start comboing.
This is on par with your Negate is Time Walk situation, and it's all nonsense. All nonsense.
That's an even odds shout out right there.
Nobin's Veto. Awesome Time Walk.
I cannot be trapped in the spin zone. There's nothing you can do.
Okay, so I think kind of getting back to what this deck is doing, I think it kind of like we talked about with the Titan Shift decks, it's clear that there is a version of this deck that is doing better, and it's this version. Like, there are so many different war decks coming out right now. This is the version that's doing the best, in my opinion. You know, it has, you know, multiple top eights in challenges. It has its good results in the open. Is Harlan, what is his motto name?
So if you don't know, Harlan Fear, Team Nova, very nice guy. He's great. He has top eighted, and I believe if I'm incorrect here, 5 opens since Hogak Summer began with Wurza. One of those, technically, he was on a team with someone who was their modern seat, but he told the modern seat, we have to play Wurza. It's too good. It was there to help in the hard lines. Like, he's mentioned this too. Sure. Like, I think he mentioned it in his winner interview. So if you count that, 4.5 top eights from Wurza because of Harlan. Like, all the SCG Tour top eights that are Wurza are Harlan. And then we have a GP win. I'm sorry, GP top eight by Julian, which is why the deck was named Goldfish. We also know Julian. Shout out Julian. You rock, dude. But, like, this deck is, like the SCG Tour is being crushed. Bradley Carpenter and Zach Allen are both also – my understanding is Zach is working very closely with Harlan on the deck. And I believe Zach got, like, 9th or 10th of the open this weekend. So I'm not trying to downplay your results there, Zach. But, like, I know Brad also was playing the deck. I know they're working really hard and they're crushing it, but the top eights are like all Harlan. He's like has catapulted himself into the player of the year race big time.
Just off of this deck. Yeah.
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 Well, and so it's a thing that like the draw for Stoneforge with this type of thing, and there's certainly precedent for this in the past, is that like you have a deck that plays like a fair mid range plan that also has a combo kill in it that creates an inevitability that your opponent can't really deal with. But here's the reason that I don't think that that's necessary for this is that you already can do that with this deck. Like Thopter Foundry by itself with the collection of artifacts that you have and everything that's going on allow you to just like pressure your opponent and stay alive and gain life and do all of these things by itself until you can assemble the rest of the pieces of the combo. And then let's say you play an Urza and they have an answer for it and you weren't able to go off. Okay, you made a construct that also then lets you create and like play towards this mid-range plan. So I think that it already has the ability to do that while being kind of hyper utility all in on the combo part of it without having to like force this other mid-range plan into it, because it already can like just be kind of a mid-range beatdown deck. And it's like, I don't know how many times I've played against this deck and I'm like at 8.
Yeah, where you're like you're at 8, and then they just kind of attack you with a construct.
It's like constructs and thopters and things like that, and then they're like, oh, then Infinite Code. Well,
yeah, I completely agree. I agree with Trey here. Mason, is there anything else you want to say on this? Is it the last deck before we move on to our last segment?
Oh, I wanted to talk a little bit more, but I know we talked about it a little bit, but I just wanted to say something, and I'm gonna get memed on here in a second. We got a Splinter Twin situation here where the deck is like not as oppressive and like not as like punishing as Splinter Twin is, where like you can't tap out, but it does like it plays out a similar game plan of combo and beatdown and like a controlling deck. It does a lot of things. I timed out.
Trey, there was an episode of this podcast, it was called Even Odds. And Mason called Dance Spirits the new Splinter Twin. Mm-hmm. So tell me where this Splinter Twin comparison ranks to that Splinter Twin comparison.
I took classes that trained me to ignore all instances of Mason calling anything a Splinter Twin situation. So I'm not entirely sure what you're talking about. Because
can you send
they were
me a link to that?
Because I haven't heard anything that he's said in relation to this or anything else being a Splinter Twin.
If you have a link to those classes, we can put them in the show notes so that other people can take those classes, including me. What are you talking about?
So the deck is a combo deck, right? And is really good at executing its combo game plan. But it can also just play a normal game of Magic just like Trey said. And that's why I'm hesitant to like even like say that like a blue-white version would be better and we should actually spend time. I am open to the idea of that being a thing.
Can I ask you a question?
But I do think this is better. And because you get to just play a real-ish game of Magic with the access to a combo kill and just randomly get them.
Can I ask you a question?
Hit me.
how many games of Splinter Twin have you played in your life?
Zero.
That seems accurate. All right, this all makes sense now.
But I've played against Splinter Twin a lot. Like, on the other side, you feel this pressure, right? You're like, there's not much I can do. I have to kind of hold up interaction where I'm going to die to their combo, right? Meanwhile, they're developing towards a game plan. Now, Splinter Twin, it was like, poke you for two, and then eventually, like, bolt, snap, bolt you out of the game, you know? This deck does it a little differently with just kind of drawing cards and assembling a couple of Thopters every turn, or having Urza, you know, and, like, hitting you with a Construct and then drawing an extra card and doing weird stuff like that. But it does put pressure on you to be able to respond, assuming your deck can respond. And that pressure can be taxing. I'm not saying that it's, like, obviously, Splinter Twin kills your opponent on turn four and, like, you know, gets to play its game plan a lot better. But he has to do a similar type thing. I do think it is, like, not a one-for-one, but I don't think it's that far off either. And I knew I was going to get memed on. I said at the start, knew it was going to happen. Yeah, Splinter Twin situation here. And that's my hot take. That's my committal.
So those are the decks that we wanted to talk about in Modern. Let's wrap it up with the decks that we would play. I'll go first. I'm going to go all three formats for Constructed. In Standard, I would play Mono Red. I believe that Chandra, Acolyte of Flame is underplayed. I believe that Frostedawn is a card that you can play 4 of in your 75, 3 of in your 75, and just really help some things out that, you know, are going wrong. You don't really want to play a card like Bloodsun in Mono Red, where you might want to play that in other red decks, and Frostedawn actually really helps you pressure them, and also is a card that is good against things like Hydroid Crisis, which is something that the other decks are trying to do to beat you when you're playing Mono Red. So Mono Red is the deck that I would be playing in Standard. When we go to Modern, you would think that I would be playing Titan Shift because it did so well this weekend. It's certainly something I want to try out, but 100% I would be on Jund this week in Modern. I believe that the format has gotten so fair that even playing Scapeshift is a punt, because there are so many people that are just playing worse fair decks than Jund. And if there's ever a time where you want to take that 45-55 deck and turn it into a 65-35 deck, it's this week. I would snap off Jund. In Legacy, you know, this one was hard for me. I've been thinking about Legacy a lot as I've been talking about it with Matt Kling. And honestly, I want to try the four-color, different four-color decks. There's the four-color snow deck. There's the non-four-color snow deck. But really, what all I want to do in the world right now, guys, is play Renin 6 in my deck with, Leobold.
Baleful Strike?
Leobold, okay. And you know, get people with Leobold plus Dark Dak Faden, so.
It's a good time.
Mason, what decks? Oh.
No, dude, it's good. My bad. I thought we were doing the other one from before. Here are my three decks. Here where I'm at. Kethis combo seems to be really, really, really good. I don't quite understand how Kethis combo works because what I haven't format? Really looked at it. Standard. Sorry, my bad. Thank you, Trey. My investment over here just got him today. No, but seriously, it seems like the deck's really good. I haven't played it. I haven't played much Standard, so I don't quite understand it. But I know enough people are saying it. So my gut says, if you play Kethis combo, do that. If not, play like Scapeshift or something. I really like what Spencer said about Frostedawn. Feather a deck that can play Alpine Mood? Like, that seems reasonable, right? Because that does seem like a pretty good plan.
Do you mean Blood Moon or Alpine Moon?
Whichever one is better against the land stuff. I don't remember their names because I've been playing. What is Blood Moon, the 3-mana one that has like the
card? So it's like the free 3-mana, all lands lose their activated abilities. Where Alpine Moon, you pick the land and it's 1-mana.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I like the idea of playing something like that. So if you're not a combo player, I kind of like Feather or something like that. And if you are, I like Kethis. And Modern, I would probably play Amulet Titan. I'm pretty sure that deck is good. But if I have time to test this green-white deck, like I'm not signing up right now for a tournament, I really want to test this green-white deck. I really believe it. I wouldn't have mentioned it on the podcast if I didn't. I wanted to talk about Amulet Titan, and I did it on the podcast. I didn't think it'd be that helpful, but I do think this green-white deck has legs. For sort of a similar reason to Spencer, I am, like I said, worried about Renin 6, but I got to get in the field and see if I can actually beat that or not. It might just be too much.
It's so funny because it's like, I'm playing Jund because people want to do this. It's like, I have a question for you, though.
Sure.
On the point of Standard, you know, if I actually just did an episode on Kethis combo on Arena Mythic Cast. How hard is it to have a deck break out at the end of a format like this?
It's pretty hard, I would imagine. I haven't seen it many times, nor have I seen it be this dominant.
Yeah.
Like, Strosky and them kind of broke it, you know? So it was Strosky, Sifka, and they Flock, were the ones right?
that did well, yeah.
Yeah, they were the ones that put the deck on the map. Yeah. They killed it. They did really well. That deck seems impressive. And then I would also, like I said last week on the podcast, when we talked Legacy, four color Delver, four color control, something like that. That's kind of where I'm leaning at right now in Legacy, and I'm going to play a league here soon when we're done recording this. So that's where I'm at.
Trey, what about you?
For Standard, I'm all about this Kethis combo just because it seems insane that this is a thing that's happening. It's just weird, like you said, for something like this to pop up at this point and for to have this injection of something exciting going on the tail end of a format. So I would be doing that just because it seems cool.
Yeah.
And also has the benefit of being powerful. So
how does Oath of Kaya interact with Frostdawn? It kills it and you still gain the life, right? Because it's dead when the life gain would happen.
I don't think so. I think how does the card read? Because state based actions will be what matters, right?
So I know that when there was another card that prevented life, that when the 5-mana deal 4 damage, gain 4 life killed it, you gained the life. So I'd assume it works the same way with this.
The only reason I'd say it makes me think not is because this weekend literally my opponent attacked me with Sword of Fire and Ice and killed my Narset with the 2 damage, but did not draw a card because Narset was technically there. So well, that's makes me think that
that's not. Oh, they dealt you the 2 damage.
They attacked me, the player, with their equipped creature. Yeah. And Sword of Fire and Ice hit my Narset.
Yeah. So the Narset wasn't in play when the trigger happened. The Narset was in play when the trigger happened because you got dealt the damage and then the trigger happened. The Narset's still in play, right? Whereas when you deal the 3 damage with the Oath of Kaya, you kill the creature. Yeah. The rest of the spell then resolves.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's why.
That's not how state based effects work. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the ruling is. I mean, Oath of Kaya reads: do 3 damage, gain 3 life. That ability's all one thing,
right?
There's not a break as far as the you know interaction there is concerned, but like I said, it would check state based actions that would die. It wouldn't, you know, be there, and whether or not the life gains, I don't know, because it's not there upon resolution of the ability.
Yeah, you would just have to usually, I think you would, I mean, maybe it doesn't even matter. Maybe you can just combo off without gaining the life and it doesn't matter. Like, maybe the Frostdawn actually has zero impact on that now that I think about it. So,
I'm not sure.
So,
Trey, what's next?
For Modern, I would be playing Urza. I think that's something that I think is really powerful right now and the thing that I would probably be focusing on. I do really like the Dredge and Rakdos, the decks that I talked about. Those are strong considerations, but probably if I had to play an event this weekend, I would be playing Urza. And then Legacy, I mean, I'd play Show and Tell, and we all know it. I like the Hogak decks. I'm interested in doing some of the Hogak things because it's its only home at this point, which is sad, but it is something that I would look at.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody so much for listening. That's what we would play. Don't forget that if you're a patron, you can check out the August episode of the Patreon only podcast. If you're a patron of $5 or more, make sure you're in the Constructed Critics group. You can see the deck list that we're playing. We post cyborg guides every week, at least one of us. So check that out. Check out our sponsor, Oasis Games. Thank you everybody so much for listening. And we'll talk to everybody next week with another episode of Constructed. Magic.